Hello, everyone out there. Do not adjust your sets. This really is not Jordan Parhar. This is no smoke. This is no joke. This is the real deal, Holyfield. I am Brent Wagamot, and I am hosting Happy Hour tonight. So how are you guys doing? We have a great show tonight. While the boys, JP, Rob, Taryn, the robot, and Alex are all in New York for Survivor Know-It-Alls, we have a great show tonight where we're talking about Episode 4 of Big Brother Canada 5, and a very balanced show tonight, I must say, because we have two winners and two losers tonight. First, the winner, you know her, she's the fourth member of the live feed correspondence, but she's number one in our hearts. It's Melissa Denny. Melissa, how are you?
I am good. I am very flustered because feeds were going off just 2 seconds earlier, and I was trying to watch the episode and trying to watch the feeds, and it was chaos over here.
Right? I wasn't even dealing with it. I was like texting with the three of you saying, look, you guys watch the feeds. I have to watch the episode because I need to know how to direct us tonight.
Yeah, you're like, what's happening?
I know, right? The two losers, it's my favorite loser. She was on my team, and somehow she blew it. I don't know how it happened. It's Liana Boris. Liana, how are you doing?
Doing great. I'm just a lovely second alternate. Thank you very much.
I'm down for that.
I'm excited. Really excited to talk about Oreos tonight, you know, because nothing else has been happening. So let's dig into it.
All right. And if Liana was a loser, this guy's the king loser because he wasn't even in the conversation. It's Harry Henderson himself. John Krause. John, how are you doing?
You know, I've already been called a loser. In New York, I was referred to as a ringer yesterday. I prefer to think of myself as a member of the Suicide Squad of podcasters. The heroes are away, and this season is just too messed up for normal, good, clean heroes. You need to get the professionals out of jail to talk about things.
I know, right? And I'm loving the beard tonight. I do have a little bit of facial hair, but I'm just lazy because I'm trying to like let this scar heal right here. But you actually have a real beard, and I'm living for it if you guys are watching in the video version. For those of you who've never seen a recap after an episode before, we're going to talk non-spoilers at first. We're going to talk about the episode. We will talk about some of the live feeds that happened, you know, way back yonder at the beginning of the week that informed the episode. But anything that happened after the episode where Dallas made his big speech, we will leave for the spoiler section. You guys can submit your questions. You can tweet me at OneLuckyGay and make sure you use the hashtag #HappyHour, and we'll be seeing if we can get those questions in. So I'm not going to bury the lead here. I was going to talk about what we finally saw on TV, which is the formation of the Dream Team, but I cannot go forward without talking about Dallas. Look, I mean, I'm a live feeder, and you know, we watch the live feeds, and you know, of course, they black out the things that happen, like the veto ceremony and other things. And when I heard that Dallas made this big speech, at the veto meeting, I assumed that he was named as a replacement nominee. And then after the veto meeting, like the box was closed, he made his big speech. But no, Melissa, that's not what happened. He actually decided to take it upon himself while the POV meeting was happening to make his big speech. What do you make of that?
Dallas makes a lot of strange choices, that's for sure. I don't quite understand him at all. Like, I feel like we were so pumped about him and we thought he'd be this changed guy and that we were going to be so impressed. I mean, like, I was very upset I didn't get him as part of my draft, and now I am thrilled I didn't get him as part of my draft. And I also feel like they were talking up that speech so much on the feeds. I kept being like, oh, I cannot wait to see this speech. I cannot wait to see like how he, you know, went off. And it was not nearly as impressive as I thought it was going to be. It was basically nothing. I don't know. I just feel like I'm so used to seeing like people talk about these great speeches, and you see like, I don't know, you see like Mitch, or you see, you know, one of these crazy speeches happen, and or like Meech, and I don't know. I was expecting right. more.
Right, I agree. I think I was more shocked by the timing of it all, not necessarily by the speech itself. Liana, we haven't heard anything from you as far as Big Brother Canada goes. What did you think about Dallas? And give me your more general thoughts on how you think this season is going so far.
Well, first of all, Dallas is running around like a toddler. Like, he's 3 years old, and he's just pushing stuff over and, like, throwing things. I mean, the guy is not being particularly coherent. He's just doing lots of insane, like, just bat crazy moves. And I don't quite know what his gameplay is. It's like he has an impulse and then he just does something. Like, there's no thought that goes into, you know, his gameplay or his moves. And it, you know, he didn't throw any beads like Victor. So I was disappointed in that speech as well. But, you know, I don't know. I can't imagine that they would have edited anything out. Like, if there was more, we would have seen it. So I thought that that was odd. But overall, this season has Dallas's gameplay is maybe a perfect encapsulation of what this season has been. Just crazy and all over the place. And the show, like, there's always a difference between what's on the show and what's on the feeds. So we can get more to the, into this later. But the they're just so different. They're just so different.
Right. I'm sure. And I'm sure, John, you co-signed that, this season has been just off the rails.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, coming off of BBOTT, where I was just sort of, I mean, I think we can say it now, it was a bit of a snooze fest. I mean, this has just really reinvigorated my interest in the show and the feeds, but it's also like expert mode. Like, I have to keep checking constantly, you know, my Twitter feed and the different websites I go to. I got to look on Reddit, and I still don't know if I can make complete sense of it. It's high speed all the time.
I agree. Well, as I mentioned earlier, we got to see the formation of the Dream Team, the six-person alliance that has, for the most part, been controlling everything that's been happening in the house. It consists of five veterans and one newbie who looks a little starstruck, I might say. It's Dimitri, along with Cindy, Netta, and Aika, along with Kevin and Bruno. Liana, I'm curious if you see this six-person alliance lasting much longer past this week.
So I thought with Aika's erratic behavior that we might see this alliance fall apart. I'm feeling better about it now, but we already start to see cracks. We start to see pairings happening within that, because these are vets. These are really good players who are looking out for their own interests. And so, you know, if Bruno and Kevin are going to try and do a deal on the side with some of the newbies, I can see that really starting to break apart this alliance of six.
Right. I know. Melissa, what do you think about this alliance of six, and who do you think of the six of them is going the furthest?
Oh, that's tough. Well, I mean, obviously, Netta is going to go pretty far because, you know, she has to.
Well, a lot of people on Twitter keep saying that, oh, you know, the minute that she loses her immunity, she's going to be nominated and evicted. And I don't necessarily co-sign that.
Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, at this point, she's playing so well. She's got people convinced that she's an impartial, like an unbiased person who they can just come to for advice. Like, are you kidding me? Like, there's no way she's impartial. So I think that, you know, she's kind of the Derek of this season, if I may say that. Not necessarily in all the ways, but in the fact that she anytime someone comes to her with some like crazy plan or some, you know, let's flip this and do this, she kind of calms it down and tells them like, well, let's just stick to your gut. Let's stick to your original plan and let's just move forward. Let's not try and create waves. And I think she's going to go really far. So I think Netta's going to be going the farther. Who knows? But I also agree with Liana where it's like there's so many cracks in this Dream Team that, and right, there's so many different pairings. It's hard for me to even see them fully as just an alliance of six. I really feel like it's just a bunch of little tiny alliances under the guise of one big alliance.
Right.
I keep forgetting that they exist as an alliance. Like, yeah. I have to keep reminding. I have to keep checking my charts.
Right. John, I want to talk about Netta real quick because, you know, a lot of people, you know, I said, well, you know, we're talking about what happened up until this episode. But a lot of people, because it wasn't shown in the episode, Netta was the final nail in the coffin for Dallas being nominated. She was able to get Dimitri and talk to him 15 minutes before the replacement nominee ceremony and get his ass on the block. So I'm so taken by what Melissa said, how when people come to Netta with a crazy plan, she's always the one to get them to calm down and say, no, like, let's think about this for a second. You know, you go with your gut, and she seems to be a calming influence on the rest of the house.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like the famous Dr. Will speech about the target that gets so big that it becomes invisible. I do think that closer to jury, once we start seeing Netta becoming more vulnerable, that maybe her name will come up. But the fact that that's so far in the future, you know what I mean? Especially at the pace that these people are playing, it's only day 12. That's unimaginably far into the future. So she's sort of like a BB God right now. She's just floating in the house and she can't be touched. And so people, I guess, see that as an anchor. Because why would she have any reason to lie? Why would she have any reason to deceive? Because there's this perception that she doesn't necessarily have a direct impact into the game. Obviously, we know that that's not true, but that's, I think, the perception.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's actually really interesting, the position that this twist, which is the just we're going to try and save Yvette twist that BB Can didn't even try to put a thin veil over at all. But it's interesting because people don't seem to think that she has a vested interest in who is going home or that she would be playing really hard or have her own opinions. I think that's why she's coming across as this kind of unbiased person, because, you know, people are thinking like, well, she's safe, so why would she be so focused on getting any one particular person out? And then also it's interesting because she, if there's somebody who says that they're coming after her, she doesn't have to get rid of them right away. As long as she can get rid of them before jury or wait for things to change, she doesn't have to act impulsively. And I think that that's helping with her being a calming presence in the season.
Excellent, excellent. I am hearing a little bit of an echo, so make sure everybody has their headphones plugged in, because I'm hearing a little bit of echo coming back. So just double check that. Anyways, so let's talk about the nominees here. I love it when Dylan was put on the block. He said, "I can't believe I'm being nominated by this idiot." He called him hair gel and tight pants, and I was like, Melissa, I know you're here for me on this. Like, hair gel and tight pants, I'm there for that.
of course. Hair gel and tight pants.
Sorry, all of those promo photos, the guy, like, they bought all the guys' pants like two sizes too small. They're all very, very tight.
Right. I retweeted a picture, actually. Ika and Cass, I think, walked into Dimitri's. By the way, I have been confirmed. It's dumb eat trees. Like, he was wearing the shirt and my dumbass didn't even see it. It's Dimitri's with a Z or an S or whatever you want to say on the end of it. He has an amazing body. Let's just call it like that. But anyway,
so he was, HOH package.
I know, right? It's totally. Dylan was not thrilled. I will say that I wasn't loving, I had said something positive about Emily on a Periscope that I did a couple days ago, but watching her on parts of this episode, I saw a couple things that I didn't like. She does tend to threaten people a little bit, and I wasn't living for that. John, what do you think of Emily's gameplay so far?
Yeah, I mean, every time we get a season where there's returnees and vets together, newbies and returnees together, which is happening basically every time now, you know, we all go through this phase where we hate all of the newbies and we're like, oh my God, these people are going to just get, you know, steamrolled. And then inevitably we start to learn a little bit about the newbies and we start to find that we like some of them. And I don't know if Emily is one of those people. You know, Dimitri's is learning how to play the game. He's found his, you know, I don't know if it's a winning game, but he's found his way into that six. Jackie has a lot more game than I thought she did. And, you know, for what it's worth, I think even Dre and William kind of have a thing going on. But Emily is just kind of, she's a little bit abrasive. I think that I would enjoy hanging out with her in real life, but she's rubbing kind of everyone the wrong way at all of the wrong times.
It was a little bit like being threatened by a puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have no power. You could be evicted this week and you're threatening people. Not a good look. So we have this POV competition, but before Big Brother Canada does something interesting and decides to hold sort of a mini competition beforehand and give somebody an advantage. Melissa, what did you think of this this Oreo thing that they did?
I thought that was so bizarre. I mean,
wasn't
first
it
of all, no, I just thought that first of all, it was a total waste of time. There was so much going on with the feeds that they could have included so much more in it. And then to have it be judged by the other people, like, they're your competitors. Like, obviously you're going to like pretend to be impartial, but then you're going to go and judge the people that you want to lose the competition more harshly than you would people in your own alliance. Like, I mean, I'm not sure if they ended up doing that because they all kind of gave like high scores for most everybody. But anyway, it just felt like so dumb and I didn't even want to watch anymore. I don't know. It was just like, oh, please.
All right.
But so
Dre wins the advantage, although it really wasn't much of an advantage considering how hard this competition was. And by the way, I will say, Big Brother Canada, I've given you many props. Visually, this competition was stunning. I agree with Sarah Hanlon. She tweeted that. On the other hand, you know, people have compared this season in some ways to Big Brother 13. You know, Rachel Riley was the winner of that season, you know, with the vets against the newbies. This competition was ripped straight out of Big Brother 13. It was the have-not competition of the first week. I think it was the BB president tweeted that on Twitter, and I couldn't even remember that, but I knew I'd seen it somewhere. Liana, I feel like they were going to the well one too many times.
Yeah, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, lemons and limes.
Right? Right? Yeah, exactly. I knew I had seen it from somewhere, but I was like,
how many different things can we juice and dip?
How many times have we seen this competition where, and I know we've seen it sometimes since then, where, you know, you have to like soak up as much stuff as you can. Or if you're Emily, you apparently have enough hair where you can soak up extra milk, although her hair looked like it's not much longer than mine. I don't know where she was getting this. My hair is so long, it's really giving me an advantage in this competition, John.
Is that why you're growing your hair out, Brent? Are you planning on...
That's why you have the beard, John.
I can do... I know you guys have seen this.
Oh, you have a man bun now, right, Brent?
I can do the man bun if I want to. I know, right? My hair's a little sticking up now. Anyway, so this competition comes and goes. We get a few parting words from Emily in the competition where she realizes she's going to lose, and she goes out of her way to make sure that Dimitri's is also going to lose. And Dylan comes home with POV, Liana.
Yeah. I actually kind of like that move from Emily. You know, I don't feel super strongly about her as a game player, but that's a little sly, like, oh, I'm going to get in the way, or I'm going to get out of the way so that Dylan can get back up there. But oh my gosh, I don't know. After that whole Oreo competition, I just couldn't believe what I was watching.
I'm going to disagree with that move, though, because if she's guaranteed to lose, I know that she likes Dylan and she's working with Dylan, but she's on the block with him. So she's guaranteed to lose. And he wins and takes himself off, you know, she could still be in trouble. I feel like if she is pissing off people, especially the HOH, by trying to block the HOH from winning, that's going to put her in hot water. You know, it's not like she's going to be saved all of a sudden by tripping somebody else.
Yeah, it was more of a good TV move. It really wasn't a great game move.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like she thought that she was a pawn. So I think that she wasn't thinking like, oh, if I'm still on the block, I'm going to be going home. I think that she was like, I want to make sure my ally is not on the block with me because I think he's the target. And then whoever else gets put on the block with me, who cares as long as it's not the two of us. And I mean, I think that also in regards to that competition, it was a huge advantage for people who were bigger, like the big guys who can squish their whole bodies down on that Oreo. They have such an advantage. Like, I just feel like someone like me, I would just be kind of like doing nothing. I feel like I would get like this much out of the Oreo each time. It was really unfair. And then the long hair that benefits her doesn't benefit Dre. I don't know. I just feel like it just wasn't fair.
Yep. I know. No one ever said Big Brother was fair. So
true.
I know. So Dylan wins the POV. John, Dimitris has a decision to make here. He needs to come up with a replacement nominee now that his target is coming down and he is vacillating. So what do you think about how Dimitris handled this situation, how the vets handled the situation, and ultimately what his decision landed on, which was to nominate Dallas?
You know, I'm going to say right up front, I think kind of Dallas made his own bed. You know what I mean? A lot of his decisions and game moves leading right up into the POV ceremony, you kind of force everyone else's hand. It would be stupid not to just go with that. But for a while, who was the names that were being thrown out? I know Karen was being thrown out. That's another one that I feel like he could have definitely put up and not gotten any blood on his hands like they discussed. Which brings up a funny point, about Karen, is I think that her gameplay is also so bad now that she's almost losing that target. It's getting a little too big for her.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. Karen was a possibility. Jackie was a possibility. And Bruno, supposedly from the episode, was a possibility. Although from what I was seeing on the feeds, I don't know how big of a reality that was that he was ever going to nominate Bruno as a replacement. And I don't think that Dimitris is still buying what they sold him about Bruno and Kevin, you know, voting the other way to not make it look so obvious last week. I think he's smarter than that. On the other hand, I feel like he's trusting Aika that she can at least corral Bruno and Kevin for the time being, and that they're on Dimitri's side. And I think that they are for the present time. I think they are with Dimitri's. Don't you think, Liana?
Yeah, I think so too. I think that, you know, he could have put up Karen, but she's, you know, kind of pulling a Rennie and now is just so crazy that there's no reason for anybody to target her. But ultimately, do you think that it was more of, I mean, it was Netta and Aika that were really pushing. Like, I don't think that this was really Dimitri's decision, because I think he was so influenced by the vets.
Right. I think it can be argued, though, Melissa, you can make a decision in the house that apparently other people are making, and it's going to earn you credibility with them. I mean, I know that this was ultimately Netta and Aika's decision to get Dallas up on the block by Dimitri's choosing him as the replacement nominee. On the other hand, they're going to look at that and say, hey, you know, we asked him to do this and he did what we told him. So that's money in the bank as far as Dimitri's is concerned in later on weeks, if they're figuring out whether or not they can trust him or not, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this move was pretty good for Dimitri's all around, because I think that it benefits him because he shows the vets that he's loyal, or at least some of the vets. So he shows the, you know, Aika and Netta that he's loyal and he'll do what they say. And, you know, he's just there to do their bidding. But it also gives him an advantage because it could potentially get out another physical competitor, another big guy who he could potentially end up going against in the future. So I feel like it benefits him either way. And I mean, not to like keep comparing Netta to Derek, but I mean, did you see how she was just able to, in like a 5-minute conversation, like it had been going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then he finally goes to Netta in like a 5-minute conversation. She's just like, she convinces him that it's what he wants to put up Dallas. Like, that's what Derek was famous for, is convincing someone that they're making the move that they wanted to make. And he's just, you know, there to guide them to their own decision, even though he was totally influencing them. And and so she made him think that he was going with his own gut to put up Dallas.
I agree. I'm loving what Netta has been serving. You know, I think everything has to be taken with a bit of an asterisk with Netta because she is immune. On the other hand, you know, I don't know a ton of people that treat like Tony Vlachos, you know, when he had the Tyler Perry idol. You know, they still think he's an amazing player, even though he did have the idol the entire time. So the fact that Netta's immune and she's, you know, making some really good plays in the house, I think she's going to get credit for in the end. I want to talk about someone who famously said on this episode, I'm going to do a little bit of manipulating and a lot of masterminding, Liana.
Cass, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. So talk to me about Cass in this episode. I mean, we didn't see a ton of her. We saw some of her there at the end when they were trying to figure out the replacement nominee. But, you know, the boys and I have been down on Cass most of this season. Are you with us?
Yeah, I mean, I got to agree with that. I love Cass and I was so excited for her to come back. And what I was worried about with Netta, with, you know, the expectations being so high and her not being able to recapitulate her game from last time, not worried about it at all. I mean, Netta's playing fantastic. Cass is the one that's having so many issues. I just want to sit the girl down, like take a Xanax. Let's calm down and stop playing so erratically.
Yeah, I agree. John, I know you tweeted me when we were talking about what we're going to talk about as far as the live feeds go, but just talk about Cass in this episode. I didn't really love what she was doing, although I did like some of her conversations with Dallas, where she was basically telling him what to do and he went and did it. And I still don't understand why some of these people are going to target Dallas, because he's ultimately a good soldier. I mean, you give him an order, he's going to go out and do it, don't you think?
Dallas has one strategy and one move, and that's what he plays with. His strategy is loyalty, and his one move is he's going to drop a bomb. So he's always like, I'm going to go drop a bomb. I'm going to go up there and drop a bomb. We got to call a meeting, I'm going to drop a bomb. And so, yeah, he's predictable. And in a game where unpredictability and perception rule, predictability is like your number one most powerful piece of, you know, tool. So, you know, I like that Cassandra feels that she can and should use him. I like that instinct. But unfortunately, in Cassandra's case, she only has one speed that she plays, and that is full tilt, 100%. She's never not playing. And so she can't just take enough of a good thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. She could have just let nominations lie. Again, I think that if they had put up Karen next to M, either one going home, I don't think that would have hurt Cass's game at all. And then she still would have had Dallas in the house. And, you know, based on the end of this episode, like, I think Dallas is a pretty good pick to be the one going. And it's almost Cass's, you know, meddling that has led to that in a lot of ways.
Well, I thought it was also interesting, the edit, like what we actually saw in the edit of the show tonight versus what was happening on the feeds, because it seemed like the show was trying to give credit to Cass, even though ultimately, you know, it wasn't Bruno that ended up going up on the block, but it never felt like Cass didn't get her way. It still seemed like, oh, she was the one that was doing all of this manipulation, and she's the one who's kind of in like running some of this stuff. So I thought that was an odd choice.
Yeah, Melissa, we've made jokes on the podcast that, you know, Cass is in love with herself and she's buying her own hype. I also feel like the editors are kind of buying her own hype a little bit too, don't you think?
Yeah, or at least they're trying to sell us on it. I don't know, but a lot of it was like making it seem like Cass was totally in control of what was going on, and that she was, you know, she had all her little puppets out there doing her bidding, but in reality, it was just flip-flopping back and forth, like going against her alliance, going for a new alliance, creating a new alliance, starting, you know, like it was just crazy. And I think that, I mean, I think that she's definitely buying into her own hype. She thinks that she's this amazing strategist. And I mean, I think it has to do with all the people, all the Twitter people being like, yes, queen, you're amazing, you're the best. And really, she's just not. I don't know. It's crazy. It's great to watch, though. Love it.
Great to watch. A lot of fun. All right. So we're going to segue into the live feeds right now. For those of you who do not want to know any spoilers about what happened after the Monday veto replacement ceremony, you can join us tomorrow after the episode. Melissa and I will be joined by Puya from the So You Think You Can Podcast contest. It's a So You Think You Can Podcast week on Rob as a Podcast while the boys are away in New York.
All right. Before we move forward, we're just going to take a quick break and we'll be back right after this.
But it's spoiler time.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler
warning.
A spoiler
warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken.
So, Melissa, many things have happened. This is Wednesday night. I know we were talking on Twitter that it feels like you've seen a month's worth of feeds, and it's only been, the feeds have been on for less than a week at this point?
That's crazy.
So, So what's going on with Dallas? Does he have a prayer to stay in the house, and or is Emily under some hot water?
I feel like Dallas had a chance, like a slim chance, up until right in the middle of the episode, like up until 5 minutes ago, when he decided to call a fake house meeting under the guise of Big Brother calling it. And he had a little Big Brother card, I guess, that he had held onto it from the veto competition or some competition. And he comes out and he's like, everybody gather in the living room. Big Brother has an announcement. And he like pretends to read off this card. And
he's
stuttering over the cards. So it's clear that he's not reading something prepared. It's clear that he's making it up on the fly. And he basically says Big Brother has no tolerance for threats or intimidation. And Emily has been doing just that. And everyone's like, okay, this is like, there was a bunch of eye rolls and groans. And it was kind of like, okay, clearly this isn't like a Big Brother kind of thing. This is you. And they were like, are you serious? He's like, I'm absolutely serious. She's been threatening Dre and William and trying to get their votes. And she's been bullying them. And of course the house was totally upset by this and was like, what are you doing? You're an idiot. Why did you do this? So Dre and William are upset. Jackie's upset because she told him not to do it. You know, Emily's upset because she's being called out. Everyone's upset because they're being called to a fake house meeting and they thought that there'd be something fun at the end of it, but there wasn't because it was fake. And it was just a total disaster. And it ended with everybody talking, saying, Dallas is gone, right? Oh, yeah. So...
oh my gosh. So
yeah, like it's going to be unanimous vote.
This is so funny because like I was, you know, I knew I was hosting the show tonight. So there was no way I could watch the live feeds and watch the show tonight. So I said, you guys watch the live feeds and tell me if anything happens. John told me in our little Twitter group that, you know, that Dallas came out and wrote this card but I didn't really understand what was happening. I thought I didn't get it, but now I get it after Melissa explained it to me. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe he did that. So they thought it was like a task. They thought they were going to get something fun. Yep. And instead it's Dallas making a game move with dropping yet another bomb, John.
Yes. I think he actually, and I don't know because I missed the very beginning, but I think he actually had gone into the diary room and then come back out. So it looked like he had been given the card.
Yeah.
It's so great.
I really do like the instinct. I mean, it's a terrible move, but I like the instinct where he's like, oh, I'm going to try to spin this as if it's like Big Brother is mad, like the entire, you know, God is mad at Emily. I like that instinct. It was funny because right after he started, the feeds cut for a second. And when it came back, the card had been taken away. So I think that he got in trouble with Big Brother for lying about production.
Yeah. Using production as a strategy is not allowed in Big Brother.
Anyone who has watched any number of seasons, they always know that the house meeting is a guaranteed, you know, NASCAR style car wreck explosion, with the exception of the one famous one that worked, you know, with Dan. But every other one is pretty much this guaranteed car crash. But I would say that this one was like a false start. It was like they hadn't even hit, you know, go yet. And Dallas's car like exploded because he barely got 8 words out. He got in trouble. And then like everyone was like, hey, this is BS, right? And he was like, yeah. And then everyone just got up and walked away.
And then he went around apologizing
to everybody.
Oh, it was so embarrassing. I got secondhand embarrassment just watching him because he was like, you know what? I'm sorry. Just send me home. Just send me home. And it was like,
and oh yeah,
he lights up a cigarette in the hot tub room and he's just like, oh, that was a bad move.
Oh my god, you know, it's like the reverse Dan Gieseling. Like, you come up with a brilliant move, but no, it's not really at all.
I was gonna say, like, this is Dallas's funeral, but not in a Dan way. Like, this is very Devin-esque, like just going crazy.
Well, and this doesn't even begin to, you know, for those of you who don't watch the live feeds, I mean, I know it's, you know, we're talking about this and Dallas made a dumb move and it may be, you know, 12-0 tomorrow. Maybe, I don't know, who knows, anything can happen in the Big Brother Canada house. But all this week, it's been going back and forth. Now, more times than not, Dallas has been the one going home. I don't know that there's ever been a solid time where Emily was definitely going home this week, but it's been up in the air. And I feel like there were moments, like, let me put it to you this way. If Liana, Dallas does go home tomorrow, why did he go home? Because Taryn Armstrong was on this very podcast saying that Dallas was positioned well to do great in this game and even threw shade at me in a podcast yesterday saying that don't let Brent say that Dallas wasn't positioned well. And I'm here to tell you that you can't be positioned well if you're an idiot. I mean, if you're the piece on the game board that's a freaking idiot, you can't by definition be positioned well. What say you?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like, okay, yeah, he's a piece on the chessboard, but he's like the Monopoly thimble and like doesn't have a move and like can't do anything. So it doesn't matter where you put him on the game board. Like, he's not going to be able to play well. And I think there was this assumption that he might come in as a different player. But, you know, when players, there's not enough distance, I think, from his season. And I think this is something that him and Cass are both suffering from. He's just going in with the exact same strategy and just doing these erratic, crazy moves. I mean, if he could be a different player, he could do well, but he fundamentally is just
an AB kind of player, and he's going to see himself out of here as far as I'm concerned. Because look, I was thinking about this yesterday, like Netta and Ika, they're in house together, they trust each other, they've known each other outside of the house, they've been away from Big Brother for 3 freaking years. Okay, Dallas and Cass were at the Big Brother Canada 4 reunion 10 flipping months ago. That's how little time they have had to look back on their games. So I really do think, you know, the only thing that Dallas has learned is, you know, I talked about this on my Periscope, that he went to the HOH. He wasn't too proud to beg. He went up there, you know, last year he wouldn't do it with the gummy bears when Tim had the gummy bears and ultimately ended up being the undoing for Dallas. This year he went right up to him and said, you know, please don't put me on the block. I'll do anything. I'll keep you safe. And ultimately he wasn't nominated initially. So I'll give him credit for at least learning a little bit, but it seems like far too little too late, John.
Yeah, so, you know, it's easy, especially when you only have 10 months, it's easy to say, like, this was my number one flaw.
Yes.
I found one flaw. I won't do that one thing. You could even, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he spent a lot of time in the last 10 months actually thinking about different things and different strategies. But the difference is that once you are under the gun, once you're in stressful situations, and you know, Big Brother house is a pressure cooker of stressful situations, you're going to revert back to that muscle memory. You're going to revert back to whatever your, you know, your basic biology tells you to do. And right. So it takes years of, you know, growing up and changing and introspection to actually change that sort of whatever your biology wants you to do. So, yeah, I think Dallas probably entered. I really liked his interview with Rob before the season started. But, yeah, the second that, you know, there was actually some heat on him, he was just like, oh, got to go drop a bomb. You know?
Yeah, that's how it read to me, too, that he knew what to say in some of these interviews. He knew what we were looking for. But insofar as putting it into practice and execution, Liana, I just didn't see anything there. And I have to believe he's going to be evicted tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, especially after what just happened, I think in like the last 5 minutes of the episode, like that's when the feeds were starting to blow up.
Right.
And I was actually looking forward to the debate that we were going to have about who do we think is going to go home? Like, do we think it's going to flip to Emily, or do we think it's going to stay on Dallas? And I think that case is pretty close.
Well, a couple things have been happening, and I want to talk about what you guys want to talk about, but I also don't want to forget this. Emily has made a few mistakes, and I feel like Bruno has also made a mistake, because Ika filed it away that Bruno said, because Emily's been going around saying, you know, I'm going to target Ika and Cindy and the vets if I win head of household. She's been saying that to a lot of people. That's made its way back to Ika, but the reason that Ika won't flip the vote and vote to keep Dallas and get rid of Emily is because they view Dallas as a loyal soldier to their number one enemy, which is Cass. But Cass doesn't know she's the number one enemy of Bruno and all these people. So she doesn't know enough to stop campaigning for him, Melissa. I just feel like it's a constant loop of people not knowing a key piece of information. And if they knew that key piece of information, then they would know what to do. But Cass doesn't know that her campaigning to keep Dallas is not in Dallas's best interest to stay.
It's been back and forth this entire time, and not even back and forth. It's just been, you're right, it's just been all around like this. I honestly have been so confused, and I'll watch one camera basically, and I'll be like, oh, Emily's going home for sure, done deal. Then I'll switch cams and I'll see two other people talking, and I'll be like, oh, well, you know what? Dallas is going home for sure. And it can be literally during the same exact time, but everybody's saying different things. Everybody's saying, I have almost all the votes, I just need three more, or whatever they're saying. And I feel like I was pretty impressed with Emily in the beginning of her campaign, when she was talking about how she was going to have Dylan say that Dallas and him had planned this blow up and that they were still friends. And she told Dylan, like, hang around Dallas. Don't let Dallas show that he's like angry with you or anything. Just pretend that you guys are buddies. I was kind of impressed with what she was doing. And I feel like when she originally talked with Kevin and she was telling him, I wouldn't target you, I've heard that, you know, it was just, I was pretty impressed. And I was like, okay, maybe this girl could go far. And then she starts doing the threatening thing, and she starts going aggressively at Cass this morning or this afternoon, and it was just like none of it was good, and I was very disappointed.
Right.
But
I was very disappointed too, because I gave her credit for that move, and then she went and did this. And, you know, I know Dallas's move, as far as, you know, with the card and everything, was terrible, but Emily has been threatening some people, not in an untoward way. I mean, it's completely legal and within the bounds of the game. She's basically been telling people, you know, if you don't vote to keep me and you're one of the votes against me and I stay, I'm coming after you next week. And she's also been threatening some of the vets. And like I continually say, if Dallas wasn't such a piss poor player, Emily would be going home this week, because she's made so many mistakes, and a few of the people around her have made mistakes. Bruno, I know some people like him. He's made a mistake because he said, I'm not very close to Emily. But on the other hand, he told Ika that if Emily became HOH, he could for sure make sure that Ika's name wasn't coming out of Emily's mouth. And of course, Ika filed that away. And it's like, well, how are you going to control Emily if you say that you aren't that close to her? Obviously, Bruno has been trying to pick up Dylan and Emily as pieces in his game as far as looking for a couple loyal soldiers. But Liana, I feel like, again, Dallas would go home if he wasn't so terrible. Emily is just as bad and could be nominated next week if the vets get control again. What do you think?
I definitely think it's possible. I think part of all of the confusion that's coming about is because there are just so many relationships and so many bonds between so many different people. I mean, if you look at the alliance chart, it's just, like, literally almost the whole thing is just full of people's pictures. It's like going to run out of space.
Right.
And that makes it very difficult to judge what are the true, genuine relationships. So whether or not the six do value themselves and they're going to stick together, whether or not the core four is there. And then now with this Kevin, Bruno, Emily, Dylan thing, I just think that the house, even no matter who wins HOH, I mean, it's possible that Emily might end up going up as being nominated again.
Right.
But it's also very possible that we see something out of left field and somebody else we wouldn't expect ends up on the block.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So I want to get into a couple things that you guys, you know, we have questions from the audience, but I also want to get into a couple of things that you guys told me ahead of time that you want to talk about. Melissa, I know you wanted to talk about somebody we haven't even said his name during this 40-minute podcast thus far, which is baffling to me. Tell me who you want to talk about.
I want to talk about Gary, because
is he on this season?
Yeah, right? I was totally thinking that he was going to be this big personality and going super hard right out of the get-go. I was not so keen on him. I was like, there's no way he's going to last. He's going to be, you know, just a giant target. I mean, he basically won his season and he's not a target. He's playing a totally different game than I expected, but it's fantastic. I think
I agree. Go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you. No, I was just going to say that somebody on Twitter, I think it was like Cena Nitz, compared him to a cat. He basically just sits around the house and he grooms himself the entire time with the makeup, and that's all he does. Like, it's just the constant pampering. But, you know, if, as far as a Big Brother player go, you know, Rob Cesternino always says to, you know, be wallpaper for the first month of the game. And I feel like Gary somehow has managed to
do that.
Gary,
the least, the person you would least expect to be just wallpaper is just like totally blending into the background. And I mean, it helps that he said his strategy this season is as long as it's not me. And I feel like that's crucial because he's making close connections with people, but he's not aligning himself too closely with anybody. He's basically looking out for himself, one and only, but also building strong bonds friendship wise with everybody else in the house.
Yeah,
night when they all had tea time and it was Cass and Ika and Gary, and then they were like, okay, yeah, we're talking to each other, let's try and save Dallas. And the next day, Gary's like, yeah, that's not worth my time. I'm not sticking my neck out for him. So I was very impressed with his skills. And Cindy is another person that we haven't seen that much. Like, I forgot she was on the show if it weren't for all of the Cindy dancing gifts. But
right. Exactly. Cindy was my number one pick in the draft. I just see it coming. I don't know how, but I'm Nicole Stradamus. I see it in the crystal ball. It's happening. But John, Gary, playing pretty well thus far. And I will say that the one knock against his game is if he's perceived as, you know, I know that Liana gave him some credit for saying, well, you know, as long as it, or maybe it was both of you said, you know, as long as it ain't me, or I'm not going to stick my neck out for it. But someone who is sticking her neck out a lot is Ika. And Ika doesn't like it when she feels like she's carrying the whole load for the whole house. I know that Gary's name has come out of Ika's mouth at various times because she feels like he's not pulling his weight, although I would submit that he is. Ika's just pulling too much of her own damn weight. John, what say you?
I will say that, yes, Ika has mentioned Gary's name, but whose name hasn't Ika mentioned?
That's
Ika
true.
Is one of the many players right now that is running around at full speed. Focusing on Gary a little bit, he actually, I think, has a very sophisticated game that he's playing right now. You're right. He was originally perceived. He's known as the person who should have won, who almost won season one, the original inaugural Big Brother Canada. But he's managed to make himself seem like not a threat. You know, this dude is, I mean, how tall is he? He's almost 6 feet tall. He's very, very good at competitions. That was one of the things he was known as in his season. And yet he has, you know, we say he is making himself look like wallpaper. Maybe his wardrobe is helping with that. But it's impressive that you make yourself look like not a threat. And then another thing, too, that he does, which I was going to make a joke about just sort of lightly, but I actually think it is a legitimately good strategy, is sometimes like right before bed, I will, you know, pop the feeds on and see what's going on. And there'll be a camera focused on Gary, and he's like shaving somebody, or he's massaging somebody. You know, he's always like he's putting his fingers. Earlier today, he was like touching Kevin's lips and like giving him some sort of this weird like facial muscle massage. And I was gonna make a joke about it because it's really silly, but there's something to be said about feeling comfortable and feeling relaxed. I mean, like you can just like when Gary was shaving Dimitri's the other day, like it was just very relaxing. It was this relaxing atmosphere. He kicked everyone else out of the room. It was just the two of them. They weren't talking about anything, not even strategy, not nothing. It was silence. And I think that that's building a actual, even if you're not strategizing and forming an alliance, you're building a physical bond, an actual literal with touching a physical bond. And I think that might pay dividends later on in the game. I think everyone feels like Gary's on their side, even though he hasn't done anything to prove it.
I agree with that. Liana, someone who isn't being very silent is Ika. And I know you wanted to talk about her absolutely haphazard game thus far and how I feel like we all kind of feel like it's going to doom her later on. What's going on with Ika?
Yeah, she's just been all over the place. I mean, and especially with the whole Dallas Emily vote. I mean, she's just, we need to save Dallas. No. We have to get rid of Dallas, and just being very emotional and being willing to pick fights with, you know, with the people in the six. And I think that this erratic gameplay, you know, they want to blame it on Slop. Yeah, she's a have not, but I don't know. We've seen a little bit of this before, and I feel like this is going to end up dooming her, you know, come week four.
Yes, I know, right? By the way, just really quickly, I don't think I ever talked about this. The have-not room. Can we just give props to the Big Brother gods?
Oh, yeah.
What an amazing freaking have-not room. This is the real shit, you guys. Like, we make fun of the have-not rooms in the past because they're so easy. Like, you know, who wouldn't want to sit in a padded race car like they did in Big Brother 18 or whatever the hell? But Melissa, like, the have-not room is the real
deal. It's great.
This is no smoke. This is no joke. This is the real deal. Holyfield.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that phrase.
They just look so ridiculous sitting between bones. It's just
uncomfortable.
So funny. And yes. It's great. I think it's designed so beautifully. I was very impressed when I saw it.
I know. What do you think about Ika's game thus far? I mean, is there any? Let me just say this. I hear what Liana's saying that her game is she's so all over the place and she keeps changing back and forth. Although I feel like in some ways that she is playing to her strengths. I mean, that is the way that she is in Big Brother. I feel like this is the first time that she's ever really had power in Big Brother. She was always, you know, fighting from the bottom when she was playing in her previous season. Now she's at the top, and I feel like if she could just relax a little bit, like she's at a 10 right now, and I feel like if she took it down to like a 7, like she doesn't need to take it down to a 2, but if she just took it down to a 7, I feel like she'd be straight right now. Don't you
think?
Yeah,
I mean, I think that I love watching what she's doing. And I think that, yeah, if she just toned it down a little bit, she'd be so good because she's making so many connections with people in the house. She's making so many strong bonds. I mean, you see that, like, all the conversations that she has with people, they end with people being like, oh my God, Ika, I love you. Or like they're laughing together, you know, having a great time, or they're like gossiping and bonding. And she's doing so great in that respect. But the problem is she's doing that with everybody. So then it ends up being, when's she going to be found out? And I think it's really impressive that she hasn't been found out yet, because a lot of the times when people are playing everybody and they're telling different things to each person, they get found out immediately. And I thought that it was so great when she was with Cass, and or Cass had told her, we need to go talk to Dimitris. And so she didn't want to talk to him because it was going to be what Cass wants. So she's like, okay, yeah, we'll go talk to him, but I have a stronger bond, so you leave the room after 10 minutes and stay out for 10 minutes and then come back in. So they go up there, Cass gives her spiel, Cass leaves and says, I'll let you two talk, I'll be right back. And when she leaves, Ika's like, I'm so sorry, Dimitris, Cass wanted to do this. We'll just sit here and hang out until she gets back. It was just, like, great that she was able to pull that off somehow. I don't know, it's great to watch.
Right. I always feel like you have to be who you are in Big Brother. Like, you can't be something that you're not. And at this point, I feel like that Ika, you know, for all of her faults, she is being who she is. So I feel like that's the game she needs to play. And if she just, you know, maybe toned it down a little bit, she would go far. John, I know you wanted to talk about Bruno and Kevin. So what say you about them? Because you got something to say about them that I don't necessarily agree with.
Real quick before we jump to them is I wanted to say that I think Ika and Cassandra are playing a very similar game right now. And so, like Melissa said, why hasn't Ika been caught yet? Why isn't she in the fire? And I think it's because Cassandra's in front of her. They're both doing a very similar thing. And I think Ika is just slightly better at it. And so once Cassandra's gone, which is funny because Ika keeps saying Cassandra's the devil, she's the devil. But I think once Cassandra goes, then Ika will be the next most obvious.
I just want to ask you, do you think that Cassandra will be eliminated soon? Because I don't really think she will be.
I think it's a 50-50. I think it depends on who wins HOH this coming week and, you know, how that shakes out. I could see it being next week or, you know, not till jury.
Right. I know that people are threatened by Cass in some ways, but she's utterly terrible in the competitions. And, you know, I just don't know why. Are you really going to use your HOH to get her out? I mean, I guess, you know, maybe she can. I know that they have been concerned about her rallying up the newbies and, you know, maybe her social game is good enough to be seen as a viable threat. But I still question whether or not, you know, when you actually have the power in your hand, are you really going to use it to get rid of Cass? Maybe not. And there's one more thing I want to talk to you guys about before you talk about Bruno and Kevin. This was brought up earlier in the episode about, you know, we need to have vets in jury. I know Netta was talking about that earlier. you know, what does she need to have vets and jury in order for a vet to win? They're possibly going to evict Dallas tomorrow night. Do you guys think that's a good move for the vets? Because I don't think it is. I feel like they need to have the vets in the jury, or at least a majority of vets in jury, in order to make sure that a vet wins. What do you guys think? Anybody?
Yeah, no, I think that if you have a vet sitting next to a newbie at the end, and then the jury is predominantly newbies, I do think that there might be an urge for the newbies to vote for the, you know, for the new player. Then they wouldn't want to reward the money to the jury or to the returning player. I do think, though, that they are not seeing past Cassandra and Dallas being a pair. And I think this is why it goes back to maybe Cassandra isn't in hot water, because Dallas is her foot soldier. You know, we've seen Cassandra going around saying, I need to find somebody who can win competitions for me, because she knows that she can't win competition. I mean, we saw her kick that soccer ball. So she needs Dallas. But then once Dallas is gone, she doesn't really have her claws in anybody else. And so I think that they're just thinking about that. They're not really putting in the context of we need all of the vets on the jury.
Okay. Cool beans. All right, John, off you go with Kevin and Bruno.
Oh, well, I just wanted to talk about, and I don't necessarily think that they are like perfectly, you know, in 100% safety mode. But right. I think that coming out of last week, you know, we didn't see the first week on the feeds. We're still just kind of picking up those pieces. But, you know, one of the first things that we saw after was the eviction, and they were on the wrong side of the vote. And, you know, shortly after that, you know, their names were getting tossed around a lot. They had to bring up the fact that, like, oh, no, we did that so that we wouldn't look like we were in a bad place. And I just think that the way that they have kind of scrambled and moved, and I think they've repositioned themselves in a good place. You know, we were talking about the six person alliance and how it is full of cracks, but at least for the time being, I think that there's reason for them to stay cohesive and together because of the Dallases, because of the Cassandras, because of the, you know, duo of Dylan and Emily. So I think that they have re-ingratiated themselves really well. And I think that that, which is something I had wanted to talk about.
Cool. I agree. Liana, I think that Bruno and Kevin have played well. I do think that there's a possibility that Bruno could be nominated if Cass or Jackie or the French Connection of Dre and William get HOH. And Kevin, I feel like, will not be nominated unless Bruno is nominated. If Bruno's nominated, I feel like Kevin's going up as the pawn, quote unquote. I can't believe Kevin would be a pawn. But I feel like that's the only way he would ultimately go home. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that if they're going to be nominated, they're going to be nominated as a pair, at least next week or maybe even the week after, because I've heard their name come up pretty frequently as being the vets that are going to be targeted. That's why I'm kind of surprised about Aika. I mean, I can't remember who it was. Maybe Emily said that she seems to be the linchpin. Like, why they wouldn't go after her, I don't know. But it does seem like Bruno and Kevin are going to be the two vets that are going to be targeted by some of the newbie players.
Okay. Cool beans. All right. So we're going to start taking your questions. If you want to submit a few questions, I don't know how many we can get through, but we'll try to get through as many as we can. You can always tweet me at hashtag happy hour. And we're on to the first question here. It's from Stephen H., who says, so why does everybody in the house hate Dylan? Melissa, why does everybody in the house hate Dylan?
Well, I hate watching the feeds when he's on it because of his breathing. He's just the heaviest breather. It's just like, it's just so horrible.
I know, right? Melissa, did you know that Dylan is bigger? Yes. Faster? Yes. Prettier than Dimitri?
No.
Did you see that when he was taking off his Oreo costume? There was I thought he was a pretty good looking guy, but there was so much flab and it wasn't all that. I just didn't. And he was saying he's prettier than Dimitri's.
I think we should all look so good after literally bathing ourselves in Oreos.
I mean, I will say though that for a boxer or a fighter, he's not so in shape as I would have expected, maybe. I don't know.
By the way, did you guys hear a few chords from the Rocky theme when he was winning the veto? Did anybody hear this besides me? I swear to you. John, did you hear it?
Yeah. I mean, it was a motif. The reality shows do that a lot. You know, they can't get the rights, so they just kind of play the first chord or two and it evokes.
No, I mean,
that's exactly what I heard.
I don't hate Dylan. I think that I feel like he's just not super exciting. So at least for me, I'm not excited to watch him. the people in the house, I don't quite understand why they hate him. I don't think he does anything that's like so hateable. So, I mean, it kind of makes people just pick someone to hate.
I feel like he's a... Yeah, I agree. Everyone's always looking for somebody else to be on the block. They want to have somebody else's name out there floating around. I feel like, you know, he's such a big guy, and it's also socially a little bit awkward. You saw that he wouldn't even go talk to Dimitri's when Dimitri's won head of household, and he was like, ah, I don't want to go up there like some bitch and talk to him and beg him to not put me on the block. I mean, dude, that's Big Brother 101. You got to get your butt up there. All right. Next question from Megan. Liana, you can tackle this one. Was Dallas's house meeting bad, terrible, or horrific? my question to this question is, which one?
Yeah.
Where's the dumpster fire option?
Yeah, all of the
I
above.
Will be tweeting out that dumpster fire gif. Yeah, exactly. I don't know exactly what he thought was going to come out of this. So I guess I'm still confused. I mean, he's already picked so many fights, so many just awkward fights with Dylan. And now he's going to go try and throw Emily under the bus. Like, bro, this isn't working for you. Just stop.
Right. I feel like he going into that house meeting, and although I didn't see it, but I'm just, you know, I'm trying to read his mind. I feel like he thinks that it's a done deal that he's going home, even though it really wasn't. I feel like he thinks it was like 13 or 12 to zero for him to go home. And then by throwing this bomb out there with the house meeting and the fake house meeting with the, you know, Big Brother card and all that, I feel like he thinks that maybe he can switch some votes. But in reality, it was probably more like, you know, 9-3 or 8-4 going into that fake house meeting. And now all he's done is solidify it as a unanimous vote. I mean, I just can't see any positives. All right. We got a question from Puya. He's going to be here tomorrow. Who would the panel hate to see go out pre-jury that may break their heart? Like his broke tonight. All right. So without referring to anything else, who would the panel hate to see go out pre-jury that may break your heart? John?
First of all, hands across America from us to you in Canada, Puya. We're all feeling you. But anyway, I would think that, you know, we were talking earlier about Cassandra, and she's really kind of sowing her own demise here. And I think that you could read it in the tea leaves that she would go soon after Dallas. And I, for one, as a liker, you know, a lover of the drama and the stuff that she brings to the table, I would really be upset if she went pre-jury, especially because, too, if she goes early in the jury, then we'll get all of the fun jury packages with her.
I think I would be disappointed, and I never thought I would say this, but if Gary goes, going into the season, I was not going to be, I wasn't a huge fan of Gary, but I think that he's putting in the work, he's playing well, and I want to see that rewarded. Not that I necessarily think that, you know, he was my preseason fave. Like, obviously, I would have said Netta before, and maybe Cass, but I think just based on what I've seen so far in this season, I would have to go with Gary.
Yeah, Melissa, I think that it was Alex Kidwell on our, you know, when we were picking people to possibly come back for an All-Stars. Alex said to us about Gary that he's someone who's worth the squeeze. And I agree that he's worth the squeeze, but it's not in the way that Alex thought he would be. Like, I think Alex thought that Gary'd be worth the squeeze insofar as like the stuff that Dallas is doing,
drama.
Like, you know, being loud and demanding attention and that sort of thing. And Gary does a little bit of that, but really I think Alex and Taryn could appreciate this from a strategic standpoint, that Gary is serving what, you know, real purists of the game love, and that he's playing a really solid game.
I mean,
right
if
now.
I had known that this was going to be the Gary we were going to get, he would have been like way at the top of my draft pick list. I mean, to think about it, he like almost wasn't picked. It's just crazy to think that we almost didn't pick him, and now look at the game he's playing. And
right. Famously, when we did our draft, it was between him and William, and JP had the last and final pick, and somebody was not going to be picked. And he picked Gary and left William on the table for the audience to have. And I was making fun of him. I'm like, there's no way that pick's going anywhere. Gary could never win a jury vote. And then, you know, because that was the question. That was the question I asked JP, was like, can he win a jury vote? And I thought, in no universe could he win a jury vote. And now I totally
think
he can.
And I mean, William as well. Right. He's playing a good game. And we didn't pick him at all. So it's crazy to see how, like, your first impressions of people or like the initial interviews can be totally different than how they are in the house. I mean, look
totally
at
different.
Dallas.
That happened. Yeah, well, and that happened last year with Natalie. Yeah. You know, all three of us picked Natalie to go home. I think all three of us picked Natalie to go home first. We were for sure she was going to be the first one out, and I famously picked Jose as a winner after his interview because I loved him so much, and you saw how that happened. All right, Julia has a question. Has a dumber, more desperate move ever been more poorly received / delivered than that of Dallas's speech tonight at the fake house meeting? John, has there ever been, I'm trying to think, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, but has there ever been something so utterly terrible that it was just so bad to make everybody in the house instantly vote against you?
You know, I'm really struggling to think of anything. I can think of a lot of events that were kind of poorly received or were maybe bad, especially like going back into season 8. A lot of the stuff that Evil Dick did was pretty evil, you know what I mean? But the audience loved it when it happened, and it didn't end up hurting him in the house. So I don't think that that really fits the criteria. There was a moment in Big Brother 15 that I don't know how the rest of the fan base reacted, but it was when Jeremy, who went out, I think, 3rd in Big Brother 15. Like, he was on the block. I think maybe he had gotten backdoored or something.
Right.
But he gave a speech where he got, like, really, really aggressive and angry. And he started saying how he was, like, an Indian chief. And he started, like, you know, doing a very offensive, like, whooping thing. And, like, he got into everyone's face. And that, I think, rubbed everyone inside and outside the house the wrong way. I think that happened before all of the other sort of controversial things happened in Big Brother 15. So that was just like a harbinger.
You brought up Big Brother 15. I thought you were going to go to Helen Was Pushed. And I was like, girl, I'm not having that tonight. Like, really, I've already been there. All right. Ashley Bedazzle has a question. Melissa, you were talking about this earlier. How unfair was the Oreo advantage? It seems impossible for the house guests to be unbiased. So So she's talking about the initial pre-competition where Gary was basically giving everybody threes unless it was a veteran, and then he gave him a 9 or a 10. So
no way for the house guests to be unbiased when they're hoping that one person's going to win and hoping that one person's going to lose. There's no way they're going to be like, well, let me put that aside and just judge them purely on their Oreo dunking. Like, it just, there's no way.
Yeah, and the way they edited it, I thought for sure Netta was going to win because she dunked an Oreo from an entirely different room. I thought that they were going to give it to her. All right, Fancy Pants.
It was a stupid competition. And then they had to be subjective. And it was just dumb.
Well, I will give them credit for this. I know it was a stupid competition. I did forget to bring this up, though. Dylan won freaking $5,000, which is a big deal in Big Brother Canada. Remember, first place is only $100,000. I think the runner-up gets like $20,000. So $5,000 is a pretty big deal. I like that they finally opened up the piggy bank a little bit. Fancy Pants says, did John lose his job and house? And Logan says, is John single? So finally, someone asks a different question, whether or not is Taryn flipping single? And I was happy to see this question.
This John, is good. This means that you guys are accepting me as the new Taryn, the better Taryn.
Taryn 2.0.
Taryn, you have been fired.
To answer the questions, yes, I did lose my job, which is why I now live in Florida. My new job, I do have a new job. I travel a lot. So I'm actually in Texas right now. I didn't have a house, so I didn't really lose the house, although I'm not in the same place before. And the answer to am I single, the answer is no. But I've always said when I try out for Big Brother that if I got into the house, I would do the thing where I would show man to somebody if I needed to get to the end. So it depends on how much money you're offering me.
All right. Cool. I like that. PL Mercier has a question who says, who's playing the best game right now? It seems like everyone is walking on eggshells. I don't necessarily think everyone is walking on eggshells, Liana, but I do feel like that there may be more people who wanted to keep Dallas prior to his fake house meeting tonight than were like evident initially. Like, I feel like Ika kind of wanted to keep Dallas. Cass obviously wanted to keep Dallas. There were a few other people that wanted to keep Dallas, and he couldn't see that. But for some reason, they all couldn't get together. I mean, why do you think that they feel like they're walking on eggshells around everybody?
Yeah, that's what was interesting was that, you know, I didn't, when the discussion was happening of whether or not they should keep Dallas or not, there were points that were thrown out there from Bruno and Kevin that were and they seem to be the ones that were all about getting him out, that were positive that, yeah, OK, we could keep him. He is a loyal soldier. But I think that everybody was just so terrified again of Cass. And so then that's why they ended up going after him. But I think the reason why people are walking on eggshells is because there's really nothing really solid yet. And so people, because there's so many conversations that are going on, everybody's talking kind of about everything. And there's so much information out there that nobody wants to say, oh, no, you know what? I'm having a really hard opinion about this. We need to keep Dallas.
Cool. All right. Tracy Burke has a question. Is Dimitri's not just the vet's flavor of the week till his HOH reign is over? Melissa, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter saying that Dimitri's is playing the best game of the newbies, and I don't necessarily agree that he's the flavor of the week. I feel like he's in with the vets until the end, or at least until jury.
Yeah, I kind of think he's in with the vets, not just because he's HOH. I mean, that certainly didn't hurt. But, I mean, I think that, I mean, Cindy has a crush on him. I think Ika kind of likes him as well. So I think that he's kind of in right. with the girls. And he's been hanging out with them. They've been making, like, forming bonds. I feel like, and Gary likes him as well. I feel like everybody likes him. And I think that that definitely helps, especially because all the other newbies are kind of causing waves and, you know, making people doubt one another or, you know, whatever. And besides the French Connection. But he's just kind of, he's getting in with them. And I think that I think he's kind of in with them to stay.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like he's pretty relatable and his social game is pretty good. And he's obviously a gorgeous guy. And I just feel like that there's so many people who want to work with him for variously different reasons. Like, I feel like Cindy and Ika want to work with him because they like him and they feel like they can control him by flirting with him. I feel like Bruno and Kevin like him because he's another strong physical threat that's in front of them that they can use as a meat shield. I feel like there are a variety of different people in the house who would like to keep Dimitri's. And he has the kind of personality that is conducive to a long Big Brother game. That's kind of how I see it. What do you think, Leanna?
I'm kind of getting flashes of Pauly Calafiore a little bit. Like, he was
really?
On the block week one. And, okay. then he ends up working with the vets. Now, they could be, I mean, they got to be different people. Unless the boy starts crying over, like, the bugs that are in the house. Although, right. you know, it's Canada, so it's cold. I don't know if there are bugs there now. But so I think that he could, I mean, Pauly was positioned to go really far. And I think that Dimitri is also in that similar spot. And if he's a more level-headed social player, which I think he's demonstrated so far, he could go very deep.
I kind of see him as Paul.
Cool.
Because I feel like the Pauly is... Or Corey, but the Pauly is the vets, and he sees that that's his ticket to go far is to align himself with the vets and kind of mold himself into like what they want, just like how Paul was like, oh, I'm going to be like Pauly and Pauly's going to be like me and we're going to be twins. And I kind of feel like he's taking on that whole vet persona that people are starting to view him as one of the vets.
Yeah, I feel like both of them are an apt comparison, and I do feel like Dimitri's is going to go off a long ways in this game. Robot Taryn, not the real Taryn, says, do you think Ika will make jury? She is constantly throwing her alliance members under the bus. This cannot last long, John. We've already thrown some shade at Ika's game previously tonight, but can she even make jury at this point?
I'll reiterate what I kind of said earlier. I think it depends on when Cass goes. I think that the moment that Cass goes is sort of when Ika is in trouble because the craziness of Cass's game won't overshadow the craziness of Ika's game. So it depends on when jury starts and it depends on when they eventually get rid of Cass. I think Ika could very well make jury, but I wouldn't be surprised if she went very soon.
All right. So last question from Pierre-Luc, who says, speaking of Cass, what is wrong with the Cass edit? It is so not what is happening on the feeds. Leanna, we talked about this. The editors are in love with Cass. We know what's really happening. But, you know, what's going on there? What's up with the disconnect?
I have no idea.
Right?
I really don't. And especially this episode in particular. She's been in hot water. We've seen her on the feeds in hot water. So we know that there's this discrepancy between what's happening on the feeds and what's going on in the episode. So I don't know if the editors just want us to drink more Cass Kool-Aid. They're going to have a very hard time explaining if she's up on the block next week as to how that whole nonsense went down.
Right. Melissa, what about Cass? I mean, I feel like that I agree with Leanna. If Cass is ultimately nominated, I still don't think she will be. But if she is, How are they going to make sense of that on this TV show, which has been making her out to be the puppet master?
There's no way Cass is the puppet master at this point. She's not controlling anything, even though she likes to think that she is. And just because they include a DR that has her saying that she's controlling everything doesn't make it true. And it's very weird that they're trying to convince us of that when we see what's going on the feeds. So, I mean, I don't know what they're trying to pull or how they're going to wrap this up in a tiny bow once she gets evicted soon. You know, I don't know. Well, who knows?
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. All right, so I lied. Last question. There is one more question. Scott's throwing us a bone here. Liana, which two of the Big Brother Canada 5 players would be the best hunted team? So two people on this season would make the best hunted team? For those of you who don't know, Liana hosts a podcast. It's over now. With Rob and Kurt Clark, I believe, who covered a great show called Hunted. And so which of these two contestants would be the best at making sure that they hid from the posse?
Right. Yeah. So on Hunted, you go on the run and you're fugitives and you have to stay away from outplay all of the command center people which are hunting you down. So if there were to be two people that would do well from BB Can 5, I'm not quite sure, because for those of you that actually watched Hunted, there was this team, English and Steven, that made it the full time, and they were like, nobody thought that they were going to make it the full way.
Liana, what are you talking about? Clearly everybody watched Hunted. I don't even know why you needed to explain the rules.
I know. Well, you are hashtag English and Steven, right? I think I would have to go with who I think would actually do well. It wouldn't be Gary. Would not survive.
That's what I was going to ask, because we've been talking about Gary and his wallpaper game thus far, but it's not really a wallpaper game. There's more there to that. So I feel if I'm guessing, and I didn't watch all of Hunted, but I feel like somebody like William and Dre and Jackie, like those would be the best people to make sure they stayed away from any sort of attention, don't you think?
I could see Bruno doing well also.
Bruno? Okay. Possibility. All right. All right. Well, we want to thank you guys for joining us tonight. Remember, we will be back tomorrow with Puya, and Melissa will return as well. We will be here live after the eviction, I think. And by the way, the eviction is tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Then Arissa has Facebook Live with the evicted house guests right after. Last week, that was only 10 to 15 minutes. So the show should be on around 9:30 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow night. Make sure you follow these guys on Twitter. Liana is at Liana Boras. That's LianaBoraas. John Krause, it says Harry Henderson as the name, but it is at John Krause, JonKrause. And obviously, you know, Melissa Denny. Melissa is at It's Melissa. That's Melissa with three total A's on the end of it. And I am Britt Wagamot at One Lucky Gay. That's one spelled out O-N-E. And we thank you for joining us, and we will see you on the other side. Oh, by the way, we need a hashtag for tonight. So do you guys have a hashtag?
I have a proposal, but it wasn't something that we said. It was actually something that Dallas said.
Okay, I'm down for
his train wreck. He's in the hot tub room, and he was apologizing to, I think it was Dylan and Emily. And he was like, yeah, I was trying to go for a Hail Mary, but it was more of a Fail Mary. So I think hashtag Fail Mary.
Right. Yes.
Given the fake house meeting, I have to go along with that. Hashtag, if you want to comment about this episode, if you agree or disagree with us, make sure you use the hashtag Fail Mary. We thank you for joining us here on the Happy Hour. Thank you to Liana Boras and John Krause for joining me and Melissa. And we'll be back tomorrow night after the eviction. Talk to you again soon. Peace out.